Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and the Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. And now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, a weekly look at the issues surrounding Minnesota military service members, families, and employers. I'm Tom Lyons. After a distinguished 42-year-long career serving our state and nation, the last 7 years as Minnesota's Adjutant General, Lieutenant General Larry Shelato has retired. We'll hear from him and just a few of the people his leadership has affected. Also on today's show, we'll explore Agent Orange and the new benefits available for our Vietnam veterans. And finally, we'll turn the clock back 150 years to the Minnesota home front during our Civil War. All this and more today on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Check our podcasts of today's show and all our shows online at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's get started. Joining us this week is Lieutenant General Larry Shelato. After a 42-year-long career, the last seven as Minnesota's Adjutant General, he has recently retired from the Minnesota National Guard. Lieutenant General Shelato, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
General, thanks for joining us. I wonder, can you tell me what is one of the most defining moments of your military career?
There's been so many. That's kind of tough. But, you know, I'd have to go back as a young lieutenant, and I use this quite often when I talk to some other groups. As a young lieutenant out in the field, I have a small team when I was in Vietnam, and we lived with the Vietnamese. And one night, all of a sudden, the whole perimeter just lit up with fire. And that was the first time that I'd been in what I considered a hit situation. And so all of a sudden, in the midst of all of this, I found myself, I had my sergeant next to me who was on a machine gun. I had a couple others down doing some mortar firing, and I said, you know what? I can do this. You know, as a young lieutenant, you're always scared because you always ask that question: how would you respond? How would you react? And that's and oftentimes now with the young soldiers that we have coming back from overseas, they say they're initially scared, they're worried, but then their training kicks in and they do well. So that was it. And I said, you know, if I can handle this, I can handle most anything. So,
and you've handled more and more every year, haven't you, sir?
Yeah, it keeps building up. But you know what? It always goes back to the basics. You know, a lot of people say, why don't you get mad? And I say, you know, in the big scheme of things, this is not that big of a deal. You know, no one's getting hurt. We're going to be able to work through it. So let's settle down and move on. And the military taught me a lot.
General, things have changed a lot since you and I came back from Vietnam. Troops weren't treated so well back then, and you learned some lessons there that you carried over to today, didn't you?
Well, that's correct. You know, obviously, as the troops are coming back, you and I could easily identify with it and said, yeah, we experienced the same things. And it wasn't right then, and fortunately, we're in positions now to say, no, we're not going to tolerate this and make a difference. So I, through my position here, we started the Yellow Ribbon program and very, very proud of that. And through you and your programs and public awareness, I've just made people more and more aware of the great young men and women we have serving our country. So, yeah, I'm very proud of our generation, as I know you are too. We could have just done nothing, but that was unacceptable. So thank you for what you've done.
Certainly feels good to support the troops today in a way that we weren't supported when we came back, General.
Yes, and you know, it's good. And actually, when we first started this, in our generation, some of them were almost angry, you know, because they never got it. And it just seemed like one day they all woke up and said, you know, enough of this stuff. We're going to make sure it doesn't happen again. And I think there's a phrase that's been floating unofficially as a slogan, and that's never again. And so my goal is, and I think, is that we build national appreciation so that it doesn't happen again, not only this generation, but God forbid if we had to do it again in the future generations, they too would give a lot of credence to our young men and women who step forward to serve the country.
We're speaking to Lieutenant General Larry Shelado, Minnesota's previous Adjutant General, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on KTOC 100.3 FM. General, it certainly feels good as a Vietnam veteran to help support the troops today. Do you think, is there anything we should be trying to do for the Vietnam veterans to make them feel a little better?
You know, we're working on that. Obviously, our support of troops license plates gives a lot of people the ability to identify. And we've been using the proceeds to help all veterans, regardless of when. We've been able to, those that might need some special access to some counseling and so forth. One of the things that's kind of interesting, Tom, that I've discovered is, and I actually noticed it with the World War II veterans, you know, the Greatest Generation. But as they started to retire and have more times on their hands, all of a sudden some issues that they were able to bury for years and years because they're busy working, raising a family, and doing all of that, when they have time home alone, all of a sudden a lot of those things were coming back. So it just doesn't grow out of it. Sometimes they're pretty latent and laid back. So one, giving the opportunity for the veterans to express their support to the current generation, also I think is therapeutic for themselves to say, all right, I'm bringing to the surface some of these issues. And they're together with their friends, which is important. So it's synergistic, and I think there's a lot of healing I've seen go on by my generation as well as the younger ones.
General, you have one of your favorite quotes is, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yes, we use that for my retirement. In fact, I think you got one also, one of the dog tags that has that on it. It's you know, we used to have the, you know, a soldier doesn't care until they know how much you care. But, you know, really it's all about relationships and so forth. I always used to tell these young lieutenants that are going to be leaders, I said, you know, one of the questions you've got to ask yourself, am I taking care of my troops well enough so that if I was in harm's way, they would risk their life to save me? And when you ask that question of how you treat others and how you do it, that it's pretty defining and so forth. So, you know, because a lot of times these younger people, young leaders think, well, I'm the boss, so they got to do as I say. And yes, but you better be doing it for the right reasons. And they better understand and feel that you are doing it for the right reasons.
General, we've got about a minute left, but I've noticed in working with you the last few years that the military today is greatly different than it was when I was in almost 40 years ago. And you said there's one word that makes a difference when we were talking, and that was draft.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, so the draft, you know. In fact, I once spoke at the university on a deal on conscientious objection. You know, they asked me, well, how do you feel about it? I says, I'm all for it. If you seriously object, please do it. We have more than enough volunteers right now. In fact, we're in the Guard about 15% over and have to cut back a little bit. Not too much, so keep, if you want to join, we'll get you in. But it was those that didn't want to go, and then all of a sudden they started demonizing is probably the better term, those who did serve, and then the draft. And I mean, I when I was going to college during that era, there was courses in how to get out of the draft. There was medications you could take to get high blood pressure and flunk the entrance exam. And I personally, my value system, I just couldn't allow myself to do that. Now you find that because they don't have to stoop to justify why they didn't go or couldn't go or can't go. And they said, all right, I'm not, but there's someone who's willing to do so. And now I think the generation is saying, I am going to support them. You know, they're doing something that, you know, I choose not to do, and that's okay. and it has been okay, and we've been done very, very well. So, to force someone to do something they don't want to do just breeds contentment.
General, we're just about out of time, but it seems to me that from everyone I've met that you've left the Minnesota National Guard top to bottom with some real quality personnel, and they've done a fine job.
You know, we have such a deep bench. It's just phenomenal, and I'm very, very proud. And General Nash, my replacement, will do extremely well, continue to move us forward. And I think the new battle is going to be these economic times and so forth to make sure we can keep these skill sets there. But we have Minnesota can be very, very proud of the men and women they have in uniform. I'll just leave it at that.
General Shelledo, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was retired Lieutenant General Larry Shelledo, Minnesota's former Adjutant General. Want to know what's on the mind of Minnesota's current Adjutant General? Generally Speaking is next on KTalk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. It's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
As I begin my tenure as the Adjutant General, I'd like to take a moment and thank my predecessor, Brevet Lieutenant General Larry Shelledo. General Shelledo has been a mentor of mine throughout my entire career, and all of us in Minnesota owe him a debt of gratitude. General Shelledo was born in Fargo, North Dakota, and he certainly has a long and distinguished military career. After graduating from Morehead State University, General Shelledo began service to the nation when he enlisted in the Army in 1968. He returned to Minnesota following a combat tour in Vietnam and continued to pursue a career in education, ultimately serving as the president of the Alexandria Technical College. General Shelledo married Yvonne in 1972, and they have two daughters, Elena and Alyssa, as well as three grandchildren, Parker, Riley, and Aniston. General Shelledo has commanded at every level through division command, including commanding the 2nd Battalion, 136th Infantry, the 1st Brigade of the 34th Infantry Division, the 84th Troop Command, and the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division. He was appointed by Governor Pawlenty to serve as the 29th Adjutant General of Minnesota National Guard on November 3, 2003, and he has served his state and nation with distinction. During his tenure as the Adjutant General, more than 22,000 citizen soldiers and airmen have deployed in support of operations in Iraq, Afghanistan, the Balkans, the Sinai, and numerous other locations around the globe. In addition to the combat deployments, the Minnesota National Guard has responded 23 separate times to state active duty missions between 2003 and today. Everything from fires, floods, homeland security, missing persons, and blizzards. Major General Shelledo ensured that the Guard was ready to help the citizens of Minnesota when called upon to serve. I'm especially proud of General Shelledo's contributions to the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program. This innovative approach to ensuring that Minnesota soldiers, sailors, Marines, airmen, and Coast Guardsmen come all the way home has modeled for the nation how to best treat our service members and their families. Thanks, Brevet Lieutenant General Larry Shelledo. You have done a great job as Adjutant General. Our state thanks you for your service.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, and Twitter feed through MinnesotaNationalGuard.org/generallyspeaking. Each week, we showcase Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, a comprehensive program that connects service members and their families with the community's support, training, services, and resources. This week, Lieutenant Colonel Barbara O'Reilly joins us. She is the chief of the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon with the Minnesota National Guard. Colonel O'Reilly, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Colonel, some of our listeners may not be familiar with how Beyond the Yellow Ribbon began. Can you explain that to us?
Absolutely. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon began really with a vision from Major General Larry Shelledo, who is the outgoing Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard and will actually retire at the end of October. General Shelledo was a Vietnam veteran, and as he came home from Vietnam, his experience was not exactly ideal. he was told to, you know, take off the uniform, grow the hair, grow your hair out, and get on with it, whatever it may be. And so as we started to deploy a large number of service members in 2002, 2003, General Shalito had a vision that this, that his experience would not be the same experience that our veterans had today, that today's veterans would have something better. So he had the vision of a reintegration program. He brought in the architect, who was Chaplain John Morris, Chaplain Lieutenant Colonel John Morris, and together they really developed a nation-leading program to support service members before, during, and after deployment. They developed the Yellow Ribbon Reintegration Model, which provided services and benefits and resources to the service members and their families as those service members came back from combat. They prepared the families. They set realistic expectations. And so this program that they started here in Minnesota has grown to be a national model.
It's really grown beyond the reintegration of the troops and their families. It's grown into something much more, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, reintegration, I mean, that kind of implies what happens after the fact. Well, in Minnesota, we realize that, you know, an ounce of prevention is a pound of cure, and so we started doing family preparation academies before deployments. We started doing reintegration academies during the deployments to provide the families with realistic expectations. And even beyond that, we recognize that the military really has limited capacity. I have about 30 people who work for me in Cottage Grove in deployment cycle support. And we have, since 9/11, the Minnesota National Guard alone has deployed over 22,000 service members throughout the state of Minnesota. I think to put it in perspective, there are 87 counties in Minnesota. And when the 1st Brigade Combat Team deployed in 2006-2007, they were from 86 of the counties. And so absolutely it was impossible for my 30 people to support all of those service members from throughout Minnesota. So what we recognize is that in every community there are resources that support service members. There are resources that provide all the resources that they need. And if we educate the communities, they are more than willing to step up and support service members and their families, not only after deployment, but throughout the entire deployment process. So Beyond the Yellow Ribbon has really become a campaign to develop networks of support throughout all of Minnesota that proactively supports service members and military families, all service members from every component, active duty, reserve components, supporting all of those families throughout the entire deployment cycle.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Barb O'Reilly, Chief of Beyond the Yellow Ribbon with the Minnesota National Guard, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on KTOC 100.3 FM. Colonel, we just had a Yellow Ribbon Summit, and you introduced a large number of new communities to the Yellow Ribbon programs.
Yes, we did. We actually declared, I think, or the governor proclaimed, I believe it was 31 different entities as Yellow Ribbon on the 22nd of September. It was just a really phenomenal day, and it was a celebration of all of the activities and hard work that the communities have done to develop their action plans that support military members and their families. It was just absolutely phenomenal. Everything from recognizing community technical colleges as Yellow Ribbon corporations to recognizing counties as Yellow Ribbon counties, and even cities, small cities that have discovered, you know, that really don't have all of the different components to become a Yellow Ribbon city in of itself. They've discovered a way to work together with other communities in their surrounding area to develop a Yellow Ribbon consortium of cities, such as the Yellow Ribbon Network of Central Minnesota, which encompasses, I think it's 9 different cities. So they've just really gone out of their way to work together to discover ways to support service members and the military families. It's just amazing.
Colonel, I understand that General Shalito's community of Woodbury is a Yellow Ribbon community. Did the general have anything to do with that?
Well, actually, you know, the general did. He was at the kickoff campaign, and I think that was in February of last year, so February 2009 was when Woodbury had their kickoff campaign. And he really gave Woodbury their marching orders. He challenged them to work together to develop their network, to make it not about politics, but to make it about caring and supporting the service members in Woodbury. Actually, Woodbury is a very large military population in terms of the other communities. I think it has the most Guard members of any of our communities in Minnesota. So it was great to see them come together and really receive their inspiration from the leader of the National Guard, the man with the vision. And they quickly got everything in order, established their Yellow Ribbon Steering Committee, and organized volunteers from all of the different key areas and submitted their action plan. And I think they were recognized as a Yellow Ribbon community in January.
Colonel, we've just got a little time left. If a community wants to start the process of becoming Yellow Ribbon, what do they do?
The first thing they need to do is find a leader, find somebody who is motivated to carry the torch, to start the journey of becoming Yellow Ribbon. And this doesn't have to be an elected official or anybody of, you know, status within the community. It can be anybody. Because what we do within Deployment Cycle Support is we give them assistance. We help them identify the different key areas and organize volunteers from each of those key areas. We help them garner support from the city council. So I think anybody who's interested in starting a Yellow Ribbon network within their communities, well, first make sure that there's not one already developed. I would suggest that first they call the local National Guard Armory and see if there is a network that is already in existence. And if there is, of course, join that one. And if not, either talk to the personnel at the Armory and ask them how to develop the Yellow Ribbon network. Work with them to do so, or they can also call my office, and that phone number is listed on our Beyond the Yellow Ribbon website, beyondtheyellowribbon.org, and their email address is also there. All they have to do is click on the hyperlink, and we'll send them the information. Actually, it's all listed on the website, so if they look there, they can find everything that they need.
That's great. Thanks for joining us today, Colonel Barb O'Reilly.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Lieutenant Colonel Barbara O'Reilly, the Chief of Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. For more information on bringing service members all the way home, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. Now, let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase, a story where someone just like you and I went out of their way to make a difference in the life of a service member or military family. Lee McNeish is the mother of a Minnesota National Guard soldier recently returned from Iraq. He's been home more than 8 months, yet she still cries when she thinks about the year her oldest son was deployed to Iraq. In that year, Lee did everything she could to support her daughter-in-law, Lisa, and her grandchildren. She knew Lisa and the kids were also supported by a Yellow Ribbon network, and that gave her great comfort. But she didn't seek special support for herself outside of her family and friends. Last week, Lee found herself thinking about moms that have a child deployed right now. She picked up the phone and called Beyond the Yellow Ribbon to see how she could support military families. As it turns out, the North Suburban community Lee and her husband live in is taking steps to become a Yellow Ribbon community. Lee is able to connect with the church and city leaders who are developing action plans for their community. It's neighbors helping neighbors, and Lee will now be part of the supporting moms just like herself. Thank you, Lee, for showcasing how Minnesotans strive to go beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is a comprehensive program that creates awareness, connecting service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon connects and coordinates organizations, agencies, and companies to provide resources and support to service members and their families, and is united to bring service members all the way home. To learn how you can join or start a Yellow Ribbon network in your community and, like Lee, make a difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. After the break, we'll visit the Commissioner's Corner and hear from the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs right here on KTOC 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons, your host. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Mike Pugliese.
The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is a close partner with the Department of Military Affairs, and this week we at MDVA bid a fond farewell to the retiring Adjutant General Larry Shelido. General Shelido has been a true advocate for Minnesota National Guard members, veterans, and their families. I want to personally thank him for his support and collaboration with us on legislative issues, outreach initiatives, events and program development, specifically the development of the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon and Corps programs. Under his leadership, the Minnesota National Guard has created programs and systems of support that have helped secure Minnesota's place as one of the most veteran-friendly states in the nation. As a decorated soldier with more than 42 years of service, General Shelido knows what happens when we don't take care of our veterans. He experienced it firsthand when he came home from the jungles of Vietnam. Imagine giving up your life to go and fight for our country, to endure the sometimes unspeakable horrors of war, only to come home to protests and hostility. I've heard him say that he is reminded of those days as our service members, turned veterans, come home from war today with the same look in their eyes. The difference is that now we recognize the reality of post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injury, and presumptive illness. And we, as a nation, support the service members regardless of political views. I am proud we have learned from our past mistakes as a country and made progress that allows us to care for this country's heroes. Taking care of our veterans extends beyond just emotional needs. There are often physical issues that also need to be addressed. You will hear Andre Sanchez talk about presumptive illness later in the show. It's not just diabetes connected with Agent Orange anymore, but we need help spreading the word to veterans and healthcare providers across the state. If you are a veteran who was stationed in Vietnam, you may have benefits waiting for you that you didn't even know about. The same is true of all conflicts. The VA estimates that we have about 400,000 veterans in Minnesota and that only about 40% ever come forward to claim their benefits. In the past, thousands of veterans have suffered in silence without recognition, without access to benefits and programs, and without support. They've paved the way. You have a chance to ensure that their work was not in vain. Call or contact us today at 1-888-LINK-VET or on the web at minnesotaveteran.org and find out about your benefits.
Thank you, Commissioner Pugliese. You can find out more about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs at minnesotaveteran.org or 1-888-LINK-VET. Each week, we explore the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs' commitment to serving Minnesota veterans, their dependents, and survivors by securing benefits provided by federal and state laws. This week, Andre Sanchez joins us. He's the Outreach Supervisor for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Andre, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Andre, I can't imagine this is true, but a lot of our listeners may not know what Agent Orange is, and they may not know about the presumptives for Vietnam veterans. As a Vietnam veteran, I understand this, but can you explain it to us?
Sure. Well, what happened during Vietnam, the government decided to use what they call a herbicide or defoliant to reduce the foliage in Vietnam to make it easier for our troops to operate over there. So what happened is they sprayed this agent, if you will, all over Vietnam without knowing what effects it would have long term on the soldiers and anybody in the service that was serving in that area. So now when you hear about Agent Orange and how it's affecting our veterans, it has to do with them being in direct contact or being exposed to that agent in Vietnam.
And when we refer to the presumptives, what does that mean?
A presumptive condition is something that the Veterans Administration has assigned to a specific theater of operation. So in this case, Vietnam, because folks were exposed to Agent Orange because they were operators in that area, now after the fact, a good number of veterans have suffered from the same conditions which have been linked to Agent Orange. So the VA or Veterans Administration presumes that those conditions are related to exposure to Agent Orange. And so when we talk about presumptive conditions, it's linked to a veteran's service and where they served. So, for example, one of the conditions that a lot of veterans suffer from is diabetes mellitus type 2, which is a direct result of direct contact or exposure to Agent Orange in Vietnam.
Related to Vietnam and Agent Orange, what are the other presumptive illnesses or diseases, or is it just diabetes?
There is a long list of presumptive conditions that go with exposure to Agent Orange. You have Hodgkin's lymphoma, you have chloracne. We spoke about diabetes mellitus type 2. Secondary to that can come hypertension, and a long list of conditions, which I don't have memorized, but that are available on the VA website and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs website, which veterans can take a look at and see if they have any of those conditions. On top of that, they just added another three conditions to the presumptive list, which, you know, for some veterans, it's a long time coming because these things don't happen overnight.
Certainly didn't. It's been 38 years since I came back from Cameron Bay.
And welcome back to you, by the way, Tom.
Thank you. For my buddies that were in Vietnam, how do they go about finding out whether or not there was a condition that might be covered or that you can help them with?
Sure. And that's a great question. That's what we try to do every day is educate all communities on how veterans and their family members can get linked up with service. In each of our 87 counties, we do have a county veteran service officer. And then if there is no representation of that particular county, and I can't recall which county it is, but there is a CVSO or county veteran service officer that represents that area. We always encourage veterans to go see their county veteran service officer. In most cases, they are located in the government center of that county, and they can go in and sit down and have a candid conversation with the county veteran service officer who can let them know what benefits exist, and not only let them know what benefits exist, but they can also provide direct service to them in the form of advocacy and filling out forms and going through all the bureaucratic processes that exist in order to capture some of these benefits. We encourage veterans, when they go see their county veteran service officer, to sit down and be prepared to share a little bit of your story with them, so that they can kind of ask additional questions that you may not be thinking about, what conditions that you can actually claim as a result of your service.
We're speaking to Andre Sanchez, the Outreach Supervisor for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, here on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, KTOC 100.3 FM. So for my buddies in Vietnam, they can start with either at your website or they go to the county veteran service officers, come in and just kind of have a little general discussion of how you're feeling and are you having any problems, and just kind of start that way.
Yep, that's absolutely correct. We encourage them to, you know, we always encourage human contact, obviously, first, which is go see your county veteran service officer. Give your county veteran service officer a phone call. Our commissioner did mention the 1-888-LINK-VET number that's on the that's a toll-free number, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They can also go to our website, minnesotaveteran.org, and there's links to find out who is your county veteran service officer. Again, we want them to go in and open up as far as what their conditions were, what they went through in the service, so that the CVSO, who is the expert in that area, can help them to determine what conditions are best to file for a claim.
What can the healthcare community do to help?
And that's a good question too, Tom. The healthcare community can actually do a few things. Number one, if a veteran is seeing them for service or going to them as a provider, they can actually share their story about where they were in relation to the conditions that they are claiming for their veterans' benefits. That'll help the service provider understand why they may be suffering from a certain condition. That'll help the service provider understand what the condition is and why it's brought upon. For example, some of the presumptives from Vietnam, obviously, if somebody's coming in and telling them in a conversation that they served in Vietnam, that healthcare provider may want to start asking probing questions about certain conditions if they have knowledge about it. The healthcare community can also encourage veterans to also get in contact with their the VA for the simple reason that that reduces costs in healthcare for the veteran, and it adds another avenue of healthcare for the veteran. So I guess in this case, the more information, the more empowered the veteran will be.
Andre, we've been talking about Agent Orange in Vietnam. Are there other presumptives for other areas of conflict that our troops have gone to?
Yes, there are. There are presumptive conditions of the Gulf War as well, such as short-term memory loss, irritable bowel syndrome, other things that are, and there's another list that exists for those as well. There are also conditions presumed just of military service, like Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS, that is just presumptive of a person being in service. Therefore, at any time, if they get a diagnosis of that condition, it is automatically going to be presumed that that's due to their military service, whether they were peacetime or whether they served in a combat theater.
Now, if a Vietnam veteran or veterans, all veterans for that matter, haven't explored what their benefits might be, federal or state, where do they start?
Again, the correct answer to that is the County Veterans Service Officer, or visit one of those, the website, or call the phone number. We'll get you in contact with the appropriate person, get you the location, and get you taken care of.
And does it do them any good if they visit your website to get more information, or where do they go for that on the Internet?
Absolutely. Again, they can go to, we have several different links to our websites. One of them is just www.mdva.state.mn.us or simply minnesotaveteran.org.
A little easier to remember that one.
I agree.
Andre Sanchez, thanks for joining us. That was Andre Sanchez, the Outreach Supervisor for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We have links to more information on the Agent Orange presumptives for Vietnam veterans on minnesotamilitaryradiohour.com. To find out more about the programs provided by the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, go to minnesotaveteran.org or call 1-888-LINK-VET. When we return, we're turning back the clock 150 years to the Minnesota home front during our Civil War. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on KTALK 100.3 FM. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. This week, Stephen Osmond joins us. For over 30 years, he managed historic Fort Snelling and recently retired as senior historian with the Minnesota Historical Society. Mr. Osmond, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Hi, Tom. Glad I could join you.
Stephen, can you tell us a little about Minnesota 150 years ago? What was it like to be living in the Twin Cities or in the state of Minnesota?
Well, there wasn't much of a Twin Cities. There was St. Paul, but not too much on the west side of the river. Minnesota was a brand new state. We had gotten our statehood in 1858. We became a territory in 1849, and we were facing some just tremendous growth. There were about 1,000 steamboats a year landing at St. Paul, most of them disgorging brand-new settlers, hoping on a farm out west. These immigrants, of course, spread out onto land that had recently been vacated by the Dakota people, who were longtime residents of this area, who sold a lot of their land and moved to small reservations on either side of the Minnesota River. So lots of opportunities for white settlers to move up here. We had a population of about 150,000 people in 1857, 172,000 people only 3 years later. So lots and lots of growth. The Minnesotans who lived up here at that time were a mixed bag. The people who had been here for many years were quite a diverse group. French was really the language of business until just before the Civil War. Many Minnesotans were mixed blood, part Dakota, part Ojibwa. As the new immigrants came in, there were Germans that went up to Stearns County out west of New Ulm. There were some Scandinavians, a lot of New Englanders who went into the St. Croix Valley for the pine forests. The population was growing fast, like I mentioned, but not much in the way of cities. You had St. Paul, you had Winona, and you had St. Anthony. Those were the largest cities in the state. The new city of Minneapolis just starting on the west side of the river.
We're speaking with Stephen Osmond on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on KTALK 100.3 FM. Stephen, did we have a military presence in Minnesota when the war started?
Well, that's yes and no. There were some regular Army troops here, and there were four forts in Minnesota. Fort Snelling, of course, the oldest, dating back to the 1820s, right at the junction of the Minnesota and the Mississippi Rivers. Fort Abercrombie, way out on the Red River, that was to guard the Red River oxcart trails. Fort Ridgely started in 1853, about 100 miles west of the Twin Cities. And Fort Ripley, about 100 miles north of the Twin Cities, started in the late 1840s. Small garrisons there, and as soon as the Civil War started, those garrisons got pulled out right away. and sent to the East Coast. Now, we wonder about militia. Well, the militia is what the National Guard used to be called, and there were really two kinds of militia back at the time of the Civil War. Every able-bodied white male was considered a member of the militia if they were between the ages of 18 and 45. They were supposed to meet once a year. There were politically appointed staff officers and regimental and company commanders, but they never got the troops together. There was really no sort of a fine for not showing up at a militia muster. So everybody was just in this paper organization. But then there were some militia companies, and those really were the nucleus of what would become the Minnesota National Guard. They had some pretty fanciful names, the St. Anthony's Wavs, the Pioneer Guard of St. Paul, the St. Paul City Guard, the Stillwater Company, became Company B of the 1st Minnesota.
Stephen, how did Minnesota come to offer the first volunteers for the Union?
Well, that's an interesting story. Governor Ramsey, our first Republican governor, was in Washington on April 13, 1861, when Fort Sumter surrendered. President Lincoln immediately called for 75,000 volunteers to serve 3 months. Ramsey knew the Secretary of War from back in his early political days in Pennsylvania, saw him just as he was leaving for a meeting at the White House, said, "I have a regiment to offer you." The Secretary of War said, "Great, put your offer in writing. I'll put it in my pocket, give it to the president." He did. Ramsey immediately telegraphed back to St. Paul and said, "Quick, call up the militia." And so very, very fast, 10 companies were raised, reported out to Fort Snelling, and we had the 1st Regiment of Minnesota Volunteers as the first troops to volunteer to defend the Union.
Stephen, we just got a few seconds left, but that was a pretty famous volunteer unit, wasn't it?
They were indeed. They were a regiment with a reputation. Their reputation was that they never ran from the enemy. Sometimes they should have. It would have helped with their longevity. But they suffered extremely heavy casualties at the first big battle of the war, Bull Run, and the highest casualties of any Union regiment the entire war at the Battle of Gettysburg in 1863.
Stephen Osmond, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
We've linked to more information on the Minnesota home front during the Civil War on the MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's take a look in the mailbag to see the listener question of the week. If you have a question, submit it to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Joining me in the studio is Lieutenant Colonel Kevin Olson, the Director of Public Affairs for the Minnesota National Guard. Colonel, what's in the mailbag today?
Well, Tom, with all this talk about the previous adjutant general and getting ready with Major General Nash being installed as the new adjutant general, I've had an opportunity to work with a number of venues for the outgoing and incoming events, and I got the same question a lot from a lot of the venue staff, and that is, what is an adjutant general? So I just wanted to take a few moments today and talk about that. You know, the adjutant general, it's actually a cabinet position. He serves as the governor's advisor on military affairs. So the adjutant general is essentially the administrative head of the Minnesota National Guard and the cabinet commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs. And it's a big deal here in Minnesota. You know, we're the fifth largest National Guard with about 14,000 members in 63 communities throughout the state. So the adjutant general is responsible for really making sure that our force is ready for whether we're called up by the state or whether we're called up by the federal government.
And, Colonel, how is an adjutant general selected?
Well, in the case of Minnesota, it's a seven-year appointment. In the case of General Nash, Governor Pawlenty selected him and installed on November 1st, so obviously before the new governor was selected. So it's a seven-year term, and it's designed that way so that it won't be a political appointment. Now, some states are different. Some states, it is a political appointment. By that, I mean the adjutant general is selected when the new governor comes in. And the adjutant general does, in fact, serve at the pleasure of the governor. But some states, in the case of South Carolina, it's an elected position, believe it or not. They have to campaign and run for a public office. And in the case of our friends in Vermont, the position is selected by the state legislature and the governor. Then that's how that state's governor selects the adjutant general there.
So does the adjutant general coordinate activities with other state agencies?
Well, with other state agencies, we certainly do. In fact, we've got good partnerships with the Department of Public Safety, as in the emergency management system that they subscribe to. The county sheriff is very often the incident commander in the event of a fire, a flood, a tornado, something like that. And it's that incident commander that determines that the capabilities or the requirements don't exist within that particular area, and then requests through the Department of Public Safety for the governor to declare a proclamation for National Guard assistance. So, but we work very closely with a number of agencies. Department of Transportation is another good example. We share training facilities up at Camp Ripley. The Department of Natural Resources, again, another training partner that we're very close with for our environmental issues. And then, of course, our friends with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, making sure we're looking out for service members, both past, present, and future.
Colonel, we've been talking today about our previous Adjutant General, General Chalateau, just left office, and our new Adjutant General is Major General Rick Nash. What type of issues are facing him as he takes command?
Well, looking ahead, it's you look into the crystal ball. I think everybody can see that the budget is tight, and that's both on the state and on the federal plane. So I know that General Nash is working very closely with his other commissioners to see if we can't eliminate any redundancies and partner together so that the taxpayers get a great value for their National Guard.
Colonel, thanks for joining us today. That was Colonel Kevin Olson. If you have a question, we'd love to hear from you. Visit MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Click on Contact Us and let us know what's on your mind. We'll look forward to getting your question on the air in the coming weeks. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, a weekly look at the issues surrounding Minnesota military service members, families, and employers. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us here this week, Lieutenant General Larry Chalateau, Minnesota's previous Adjutant General, Lieutenant Colonel Barb O'Reilly from Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, Andre Sanchez from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and Steve Osman from Fort Snelling. Of course, the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Mike Pugliese, and finally, the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash. Thank you for joining us today for the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. If you have questions for our mailbag, or if you want to check out the podcast of today's show and all our shows, visit us online at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Please join us every Sunday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. right here on KTalk 100.3 FM. I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.